From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
It's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. People say, you say that all the time. I said, well, it's true. It is a beautiful day the Lord has made. Christopher Owens joins us, the director of the Office of Family and Faith Formation.
Hey, glad to be here, Bob.
Awfully good to have you.
Yeah, happy
new
year.
Smile. Happy new year. I see a big smile on your face. Something's going on.
Well, you know, I tell you, my wife and I were talking the other night, and January's just been a blur. We made these New Year's resolutions, and I said, you know, I'm just going to take a mulligan on January.
Have you failed all of them already?
February 1, we're going to pop a new bottle open. We're going to, you know, watch the ball drop, and we'll get started over again with our New Year's resolutions.
Well, actually, you can wait till after the Super Bowl, which is the 2nd.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Perfect.
I think it's the first time the Super Bowl and Groundhog Day and the presentation of Jesus have all fallen on the same day.
Exactly right. Candlemas, the traditional English name for the feast day, right?
Right.
In Rome, in fact, the St. Peter's Square, the nativity set, stays up until February 2nd.
Is that right?
That's right. That's the sort of the last day of Christmas.
The last, not January 6th.
Yes. Yeah, but not the baptism of the Lord, but February 2nd. It's sort of like this. I don't know. Actually, it's really beautiful, this sort of progressive coming down from the celebration, right?
Yeah.
We see this also with Easter, right? There's Easter, and then there's the octave, and then there's, you know, up to the Ascension.
Stretches all,
and then there's
all
the
way to Pentecost.
Yeah, and then, you know, there used to be an octave of Pentecost, too. So I love this idea of the right proportion of feasting, and not like we're gonna have a party and be done with it, but we're gonna celebrate it. We're gonna keep it in our minds, and then it kind of naturally tapers off, right?
Yeah.
And it's okay, right? That there's a little bit of tension, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes Lent will start before February 2nd.
Close.
Yeah. Exactly right. And that's okay, right? We get into our fasting mode too. And
well, you know, I was talking with James Cavanaugh, the director of the Office of Worship and Prayer, the other day, and you know, he was explaining Ash Wednesday. This is the last week of February this year, and I said, I wonder if Ash Wednesday and Leap has ever fallen on the 29th of February.
Yes,
you know, and I Googled it, figuring nobody has ever even. Instantly, it pops up and it says never.
Yeah, never.
Never, but it will.
In I think like 80 years, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. I think James and I were talking about this after the fact. And I'm
like, wow, that's pretty darn interesting.
Yeah, so maybe like 2095 or
something like that. Yeah. We'll still both be young
exactly
men.
Right. Exactly right. Exactly right. The technology will have advanced by then.
That's right. So, and you know, I can remember talking with the late Bishop Garcia when he was auxiliary here. And it was around Christmas time, and I was asking him about family traditions and stuff, and he says, well, you know, in my family, the big day was January 6th. He says, we would put our boots out for the kings to fill them with treats, and we would all scramble around trying to find the biggest boot in the house.
Ha.
I went home and made the mistake of telling my kids about about that day, and now... Every January 6th, they got their boots by the door.
Yes.
So you stretch Christmas out.
Exactly right. You know, so I don't know. I feel like we're still solidly in this this new year and this rejoicing in the nativity of the Lord.
Yeah.
And you know, the readings in the life of the church are going to take us now before we get into Lent, into the beginning of the mission, right? And we'll take a little break for Lent and Easter, but then by Pentecost again, we'll be solidly in this missional time, the life of the church.
Right.
So why they call it the ordinary time,
or
the time of the year.
Right.
This is really about the work of the church in the world.
Right.
Right?
And this is ordinary, not meaning mundane. It means ordered.
Exactly right. A time ordered. And what is this time ordered? You know, the work and the mission of the church? Well, it's ordered towards towards that great commandment of Jesus, you know, to go make disciples.
Right.
And so, in fact, you know, one of the things we've been working on to prepare in our office, in the Office of Faith Formation, is how do we better equip our lay leaders to do that mission alongside of our clergy,
right,
and in service and support of the people in the parish,
right,
and ultimately so that our parishioners will go out into the world and to be salt and light.
Yes.
Yeah. So the big initiative that's come up this week, of course, we're always doing something. The Lay Mission Project launched again earlier this month.
What an exciting project that is, too.
Exactly right. You know, we have 155 people doing it this year from the diocese. The first cohort was about 80.
Mm-hmm.
So we've almost doubled our first cohort.
That's great.
And they'll be in 3 years of formation for how to do this mission, right? And so it got off to a really exciting start with Father Michael Sweeney and with Sean Bryan, the Papal Ninja,
right,
2 weeks ago up at St. Joseph Morello. And you can just feel the energy in the room and the enthusiasm to get started with this project.
Did Sean Bryan have rings and bars and water to swim across?
No, you know, he actually dislocated his shoulder during the finals last year, the American Ninja Warrior show. And, you know, I asked him. He feels mostly fully recovered, and hopefully he's going to make a go at it for this season.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, he was all business that weekend, the business of the church. So
we're lucky to have him.
Yeah. You know, so that's something that's going on for the end user right now.
Right.
And you know, if one of the listeners really wanted to get involved, we may be able to squeeze them in to this program of formation. There's another exciting thing that we've just launched this month as well. And this is really for parish leaders, for school teachers or youth ministers or directors or coordinators of religious education. And that is, it's a new master's degree in theology.
Wow.
We've been running a graduate program, a couple of different cohorts the last many years, through Santa Clara University.
Right.
Exactly right. A graduate program in the pastoral ministry. And this time we're actually going to change it up a little bit. And we're really excited to announce a new partnership with the Dominican School of Philosophy and Theology in Berkeley. Of course, they're part of the GTU there, and we've been working with them, sort of taking this theme of co-responsibility that's been such a big priority of bishops, and of course that the Lay Mission Project is built off of, and so it's a new MA in theology for ecclesial mission, right? That's a fancy title, right? But but what is it? It's a degree in theology for understanding the mind of the church in her theology, and in her praxis, right? So in how to go out and do the mission,
right?
And so when we were sitting down to look at this, we said, hey, if we're going to have co-responsibility, if this is a primary value, then this means that our leadership, our lay leadership, need to have a formation that is complementary to that of the clergy, right? And so the first 3 years of this 4-year part-time program are rooted in systematic theology and philosophy.
What does that mean? We hear that term a lot.
Sure.
What does that mean?
Systematic theology means that you're basically building a house, and you have to start with the foundation. Right. And if you don't have a good foundation, then the walls are just going to fall over.
Yeah.
Or if you don't have the right insulation, then you're going to get cold. Right. Or your roof's going to have leaks in it.
Exactly.
And so systematic theology, essentially, it's a way of teaching or learning theology that starts with that foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And that foundation in our Catholic tradition, of course, is the Scriptures.
Sure.
And that's got to be our firm foundation. But faith and reason, right? And so Scriptures and also a realist sort of philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So learning some of the classical philosophy of Aristotle, as well as some of the developments in the philosophic right. tradition that our Catholic teaching utilizes,
right.
Especially in the area of morals. This is a big topic in, right. in contemporary discourse.
Right.
And so to give the learner a set of tools in order to think and to make judgments, mm-hmm. And then in order to act in accordance with what we call the sense of faith, right? Mm-hmm. The sensus fidei. And so that's really the goal of systematic theology. And so it takes on different different kind of flavors, as it were, right. depending upon the school and the institute, and we've gone with the Dominican school precisely because of that great tradition of the Dominicans of Thomas Aquinas,
right.
You know, the great doctor of the church, you know, whose feast day we just celebrated the other day. So so we're really excited about that. It's going to be 3 years of as we say the science, right, of theology and philosophy, and the fourth year is really going to be about the arts. And when I say the arts, what I mean by that, we can go back to that co-responsibility paradigm. The priest learns the science of theology and the art of homiletics.
Uh-huh.
Right, and in a similar way, the laity, you know, they don't have to worry about homiletics, but what about catechetics?
Mm-hmm.
Right, how do we do catechesis in a way that that is demonstrated to be effective, mm-hmm. And follows the methods that are proposed by the church for bringing a person into a loving relationship with Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
and then having brought them into that relationship to empower them to go and live that relationship of love in the world.
Wow.
So it's really exciting. I want to be careful not to say, you know, there's 3 years of like hard theology and 4 years of application.
Right.
The whole of the 4 years is going to be designed for somebody who is it's a part-time program, so somebody who's working full-time, somebody who's got professional obligations in a right. family life, and not for an academic outcome, right? The
right.
the goal of this master's is not for somebody who's going to write articles or books or publish or go right. teach at the university. The goal of all of this program is for people who are going to be practitioners,
in
people
the parish.
Who are going to be yeah. in the parish, going to be in the school, going to be
right.
involved in nonprofit organizations or other ministries supporting the work of the church.
Sure.
And so all of the courses are going to have a practical sort of application mm-hmm. Aspect to it. So
how would from a practical standpoint, from the student, are they going to go to Berkeley? Is it online? How will that work?
That's a great question. So we've set it up as a hybrid learning model, mm-hmm. and this is a catchphrase. What does it mean? It means that we totaled it up, and something like 55 or 60% of the learning is going to be done face to face. But the way we've done it is really clever, insofar as we take advantage of a short-term residential in the summer, mm-hmm. 1 week.
Oh, okay.
Down in Berkeley, and this will be kind of like a launch for the next year.
Residential right there, or
well, you know, there's St. Albert's Priory is mm-hmm. the Dominican house
right.
there in Oakland, so
right.
a couple of miles away from Berkeley.
But they can live there,
exactly. So stay on campus
right.
there, and be immersed in the prayer and the spirituality of the Dominicans.
Sure,
To be able to bring that into our study together. So that'll be a 1 week of contact each year. Then about once a month, there will be a Saturday in class day, and that'll be actually here at the Pastoral Center.
Oh, okay.
Right? So So
we can put a welcome to Berkeley sign over the pastoral
exactly,
center.
Yeah, Berkeley East.
Berkeley East. Yes.
Yes. So that'll be once a month, and then the rest of the course will be done as a combination of synchronous online learning, mm-hmm. which is where you're sitting on like a Zoom or a Skype call sure. live, sure. and you're having a lecture or a seminar. And then asynchronous learning, which is where you've been given some assignments to work at your own pace,
right.
as your schedule allows you to accomplish the work.
So some of the students in Vallejo will say, "I'd rather go to Berkeley."
Maybe they will. Maybe
that'd
they will.
Be pretty close. Be pretty
yeah,
close.
It'd be about 50-50. Just yeah. think of the traffic that it takes to get from Vallejo to Oakland.
Yeah, that's you know, it's my oldest son went to Berkeley and. Right. I just knew exactly when I'd go down to visit him or maybe we're going to go to a ball game or something. I knew exactly where on 80 it stopped.
Yep.
It was about 2 miles short of University Avenue.
Oh, okay.
It just stopped.
Yeah. See, when I was doing my commute to Marin, it was about the Carquinez Bridge,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And, you know, I could make it 60 miles, no problem. And those last 18 miles would take
forever.
Me longer
yep.
than the other 60.
Yeah.
So...
So how can people sign up for this?
So in the first place, you can go and look at the website for Dominican School of Philosophy and mm-hmm. Theology. They've got a new page up that explains it in more detail. But the way they can get in touch to register their interest would be to reach out to me directly.
Okay.
My email address is cowens@scd.org. That's Chris Owens at Sacramento Catholic Diocese. So we're really excited. We're hoping to have a cohort of about 8 to 12 students mm-hmm. and really offer this time of formation in order to build a set of strong leaders for how we're going to reimagine the role of the laity in the mission of the church here
so
in the 21st
important.
Century. So,
yeah, so will there be other dioceses participating in the same program?
Right now, it's just us, mm-hmm. and the Dominicans have been really really keen to partner with us and to work with us, it's kind of a new endeavor, mm-hmm. So they want to kind of grow it incrementally,
yeah.
And we'll see what happens in the future with them. But I'll say this for not to oversell it, but just to state a fact. In my own education and before I came to work at the diocese, the Dominican School of Philosophy and Theology is one of a handful of institutions in the world that offer such an incredibly high level of theological uh-huh. formation.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we've got this opportunity to partner with them and bring that experience and that wisdom of the Dominican tradition into our diocese, I think it's an opportunity that's never been afforded to
yeah.
to anybody before.
Boy, that's fabulous!
So I'm very excited about the prospects here, and we really hope that that we'll get a good cohort of people to start this coming summer.
Boy, that's great. And it'll start in the summer?
It'll start this summer, yep. Middle of June. We've got dates pinned down. I can't recall the exact date. But
and you know something? It's cooler in Berkeley in the summer than it is here.
That's true. So we really hope that we'll get a good group of folks to join us for this cohort.
Very good. Well, Chris, it's exciting time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show here today, Bob.
Absolutely, Chris. Yeah. That's Chris Owens. So, again, it's C. Owens. OWENS@scd.org. Thanks, Chris. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on a Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, this is Laura Lynn, Assistant Director for Lay Formation, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Laura Lynn, for all you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Appreciate it very much. Appreciate the introduction. This is the Bishop's Hour. You should save the date, circle the date, April the 24th, the 14th annual benefit dinner and raffle for the poor, celebrating the Vincentian traditions at the Doubletree at Arden. All the it's just the annual St. Vincent de Paul dinner for the poor. Ralph Middlecamp, who is the national president of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, will be the keynote speaker. Catholic Charities of California will be the benefactor of the year. It will all take place again April 24th, 2020. You can go to the Google St. Vincent de Paul Sacramento, and you can learn all about it. Also, they will be having their annual walk coming up too to raise money for the legal aid coming up on the, I believe it's on the 7th of February. We'll give you all that information as well. But very, very good for, I've been to most of these dinners, and they're spectacular. There's just literally no other word for it. They're just spectacular dinners, and they are just, they're a lot of fun. But the speakers are always just outstanding. Of course, St. Vincent de Paul Society, if you look at who they are in this area, founded 1833 by Frederick Ozanam, 20-year-old law student in Paris. People at some of his law friends were, saying, "What do you do? You're a Catholic. What are you doing?" Well, he founded this society in the Sacramento Diocese alone. People served 241,000. Expenditure and service for the poor, 1.7 million. It's just amazing what total value of Vincentian services in the diocese, $10 million. The Valentine run, the Race for Justice, is February the 8th. I had the day one day off there, Saturday, February 8th, rain or shine. They set up on the backside of Country Club Plaza, and the registration starts at 6:30 a.m. The first for 6:30 to 7:50, the first run is at 8 a.m. for 0 to 5 year olds, and then 6 to 9 year olds, 10 to 12 year olds. A lot of people walk or run, and again, that's the 17th annual Valentine run to benefit Legal Services of Northern California. Well, we're pleased and honored to welcome Tom Brecka, who is the president and chief legal counsel of the Thomas More Society. Good day to you, Tom. Good day. Good to have you talking with me again, and always look forward to our conversations.
Yes, indeed, Bob. Thanks for the invitation.
Very good, very good. A difficult trial coming up. I guess it's not a happy time.
No, well, you know, it isn't happy, but we got to go through the drill. You know, when you do what David Lyden did and you go after Goliath, you know, young David, you know, is facing some adverse consequences, and he's up to the challenge, and we're along with him as his lawyers, and as you know, he went undercover for over 2 years and took all this videotape of Planned Parenthood and other abortion figures, giving us an inside view of the abortion industry, and of course it was devastating to their good name and reputation, and they retaliated by filing suits in San Francisco, also in Los Angeles, also in Texas, and we got another one up in Seattle, Washington, but the main show is right in the middle of San Francisco, so we just had one long trial. We had in the civil case, we got some more coming up. We had a criminal preliminary hearing, and probably end up with a jury trial of some kind in that criminal case, also in San Francisco. So, yes, our hands are full. That's a challenging time.
So, I mean, civil cases are never any fun, but they're a different animal than a criminal case.
Well, you know, the verdict, we had a jury verdict in the middle of November for $2.2 million,
right.
Maybe a few more than that. Does it matter? You know, and we're talking up in that stratosphere for, you know, a 30-year-old who has no chance of ever paying off a judgment of that magnitude. It was also entered against a lot of the people who worked with him and supported him. And we think that'll be changed. We might knock off some of those damages that are terribly duplicative.
So what was the finding of the jury? What did they base the damage award on? How much of that was compensatory? How much of it was punitive, et cetera?
Well, the punitives were a little less than $1 million, so that was a big chunk of it. And the so-called compensatory damages, frankly, the court, I think, contradicted itself. It said that they weren't allowed to recover damages to the reputation. Based on what the content of the videos showed, he wouldn't even allow us to show most of the videos to the jury. He said it was only the direct damages from their trespassing and their false representation as to the, you know, David and Sandra Merritt claimed they were operating a baby parts brokerage themselves, you know, and, well, how do you separate out the damages from the reputation?
Right, right.
We think that that's going to be blown out of the water on appeal.
So is your appeal...
reporting is a staple of journalism nowadays. And
oh, absolutely. I don't remember the show, but I think it was an NBC show where they were going undercover to catch, you know, sexual predators.
And the
whole thing was a ruse. I mean, that's how they operated.
Well, there's a guy, you know, I've never seen the show. I live in Chicago, but I'm not in court in San Francisco. But KCBS down in Los Angeles supposedly has a fellow named David Goldstein who every other week as an undercover expose of a, one of them was a chiropractor selling, you know, handicapped parking tickets for $250 or $500. How does a journalist find the truth of rackets like that unless he or she goes undercover?
Yeah, I've seen it with auto repair shops, you know.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, I've never seen lawsuits based on that.
Yeah, not just a spark plug. You need a whole new.
That's
engine.
Right. Yeah, you're gonna replace your engine. Yeah.
Yeah. The misrepresentation, leaves a bad taste in people's mouths. We don't like to do it. I the example somebody put to me way back in 2015 when this case first started, and I was grappling with these issues. How do you defend lying when we have this George Washington and the cherry tree story we're
sure.
taught in kindergarten about? And, well, the Nazi comes in and says, are you hiding any Jews? And where are they? Mm-hmm. I mean, is that an occasion where you must tell the truth to get to heaven? I think it's the opposite. And, and the Supreme Court of the United States has said that a misrepresentation in furtherance of public policy, not to, steal the inheritance from a widow, but for monetary gain, but, a so-called white lie, these can be protected under the First Amendment. And that's what's at stake here. And that's why in California, in a case that came out of Idaho, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said that undercover journalists looking into animal abuse was protected by the First Amendment. So why not when you're looking into human abuse?
law enforcement uses deception all the time. The entire CIA is based on deception.
That's right.
Most of our drug busts have been with undercover people posing as drug merchants.
Well, exactly. And David and Sandra and their helpers were not doing this for money. They were not trying to.
Right.
They were trying to expose the people who were killing for money, doing it under the guise of medical research. Baby part research has not yielded anything tangible, and compared to the adult stem cell research, it's a little cottage industry that has grown up in this country in the teeth of federal law that prohibits making a profit from the sale of human body parts, and that's what is going on here. And David's investigation pretty well has proved there's a thriving marketplace, and it took this tactic of undercover journalism to find that truth.
So,
and how else could it have been found?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, did Lila Rose ever face legal action for her work, undercover work?
Bob, we represented Lila, and that's how we got to know David. And no, the worst we ever had to deal with was YouTube taking down some of their videos.
Uh-huh.
And we persuaded YouTube that these were accurate, done in good faith. They weren't deceptive. They weren't doctored. And they were put right back up. They were. Planned Parenthood threatened to sue her, I think, when she was still a student at UCLA.
Wow.
And that's how I got to know her. I called her up and offered help. And, they never did come through with a lawsuit. Or if they did file it, frankly, that memory is a little hazy on it. I think they dropped it.
So on appeal with the civil judgment, are you actually appealing the verdict or just the award?
Well, we appeal just about everything under the sun, frankly.
Okay. Yeah.
We're not at the appeal stage yet. The judge separated out a claim for unfair competition, if you can believe that, against these the competition here is in the marketplace of ideas and the political arena. It's not that commercial competition, which is what this law is aimed at, but we're going to have a separate hearing on that, and then we're going to argue about those duplicative damages and try and knock off a few hundred thousand, if not a couple of million, from that verdict before we get a final judgment. And from that final judgment, then we will take an appeal. I if I sound pessimistic, that we're still going to end up with a judgment against us, well, I'm an experienced veteran pro-life lawyer.
Yeah, so yeah, you know,
I'm
I mean,
not used to winning many battles in the trial court. We seem to require appeals when people take their time and really take a good hard look at these cases.
Now, tell us about the criminal trial.
Well, we've got a court date in front of Judge Christopher Hyde of the Superior Court, Felony Division, down in up in San Francisco, I should say. We'll be there February 21st. He's already ordered that of the 15 felonies originally brought, only about two-thirds of them survive, and now they're trying to add another one. They're a little late, so I think that'll be barred by the statute of limitations. Mm-hmm. But we'll see what the judge
and what,
is
what,
going to
what's
rule
the
on
most,
those things.
What's the most serious charge? What violation of what law?
Well, the eavesdropping law, California eavesdropping law, that requires consent by both parties to a private confidential conversation.
Mm-hmm.
If either of the parties is using a recording device. Mm-hmm. And that's the key, and it's really how you interpret that. And, you know, there are two major defenses. One is if you believe the conversation could reasonably be overheard
mm-hmm.
by somebody not a party to the conversation, then the two-party consent requirement is not required. And, you know, it's if it's in a public place. Well, all his recordings were in public areas, in restaurants or in, you know, mm-hmm. Banquet halls at these hotels.
Right.
And he had good reason to believe that there could be overheard. In fact, he avoided scrupulously recording anybody in a private office
mm-hmm.
with the door closed.
Right.
You know. So that's number one. Number two, if we prove that he believed reasonably that he was going to turn up evidence of a crime of violence against human beings, then his recording without two-party consent is also legitimate. And that's precisely what he was trying to do, and he did do. He turned up evidence that not only are they selling body parts, but they're dickering over the price. You know, I want a Lamborghini, the lady said.
Right.
But he also found that they, in their effort to get pristine body parts, organs, for premium price resale, they were using techniques that led to a lot of intact births of live infants whose organs were then harvested. And that's mm-hmm. called infanticide, a form of murder, homicide.
Right.
That's not abortion. That's a murderous killing, and that is a crime of violence against a human person. Under the law, put abortion law aside. That's the kind of scandal that his undercover effort shined a spotlight on. Now, the judge ordered a jury trial without really evaluating or passing on the evidence we presented in support of that that defense of infanticide.
Mm-hmm.
So if that isn't thrown out on appeal, and that goes to a full-dress felony jury trial, we're going to end up putting the abortion industry on trial.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue is infanticide. And there's plenty of evidence that it's happening in our country now. You know, it isn't ancient history with the Babylonians and the Aztecs. This is going on in our so-called civilized society nowadays. That's just incredible. I was shocked by things I learned as a defense lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
The news media, mainstream so-called, has ignored all this evidence. But if we get a full-dress jury trial here somewhere down the road, how can that be kept quiet? I think that it will have a revolutionary impact on the abortion debate in America.
So that's your preference, is to have the full-blown jury trial?
Well, no, we'd like to, you know, in service of our client, we want to get the thing thrown out. But, you know, I'm just saying that if the worst happens and we have to go through another jury trial, it'll be a humdinger. And,
but if he's convicted, is he facing serious jail time?
Oh, yes. Yeah, these are felony charges. So if all of them were sustained, even with a few of them knocked out from the preliminary hearing, why, he and Sandra could both be in jail for up to a decade, maybe a little bit more, you know. And that'd be in the penitentiary. That's not an overnight stay in the county jail down the street.
Yeah.
So this is serious stuff, and, you know, a push is coming to shove, inevitably. The process is slow and grinding, but, you know, this is going to, I think, make a major impact, as I said, on the entire abortion debate. We're beyond abortion now, talking about killing human beings with beating hearts.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, David's from my hometown, so we're praying for him, no matter where he's from.
We need your prayers, that's for sure, and it's a spiritual battle, and it's going to go on and get hotter than it already has been, and we're incinerating heat, let's put it that way.
Yes. Well, Tom, we greatly appreciate all the work you do and taking the time to join us here on the Bishop's Hour, and we'll look forward to talking to you as events develop. So
indeed, and they're developing apace, Bob. So thank you very much for your attention.
Great, thanks, Tom. God bless your work.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Take care. Bye bye now.
That's Tom Brekka, the president and chief counsel of the Thomas More Society. Takes on a lot of freedom of religion cases and things like that. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Hello, this is John Watkins, Director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. You are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, John. Thanks for all you do here for Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. And we have some anniversaries. They always tell us when the anniversaries that people have are some of our clergy. Father Patrick Gavin, February the 1st. Father Fernando Meza, February 21st. Father Juan Francisco Bracamontes, February 23rd. Father Nicholas Ho, February 25th. And Father Joseph Nguyen, February 26th. Deacon Ned Quigley, date of ordination, February the 25th. So remember all those folks in your prayers and your good wishes for all they have done for us and the faith here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Well, Mark Ross joins us by phone from the Black Catholic Council here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Mark, good day.
Hey, good morning, Bob. How are you?
Doing very, very well. Good to hear your voice. Sorry you're not here in person, but it's always good to talk with you.
Oh, thank you. Likewise, always.
Big events coming up.
Yes, yes. So on February 7th, we're going to have a guest speaker. So we have two events for Black History Month on February 7th.
And that's right. This is Black History Month coming up, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. It is. February is just a national celebration, mm-hmm. actually international. And for us here in the diocese, we have two events. One is Banker Event is on February 8th, our Black Catholic, our Black History Month Mass on February 8th.
And that's 5 p.m. at St. Rose?
Yes.
Right.
And that's our monthly Mass, but we'll have a special commemoration on that day. And we have three special guests. One is a guest choir from Oakland, mm-hmm. called the Inspired Catholic Voices. And the other is a professor from the University of Dayton, Dr. Cecilia Moore. Mm-hmm. And she'll be giving a talk on the civil rights history of civil rights contributions of Black Catholics in the United States.
Wow.
And that's the basic gist of that. But also on February, I can tell you more, but on February 7th, she'll be doing a special presentation for our western end of the diocese in Vallejo. She'll mm-hmm. do a presentation there as well.
That'd be at St. Basil's?
Yes, at St. Basil, mm-hmm. at from 7:30 to from 7:30 to whenever it ends at St. Basil.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be a great opportunity there. The title for her presentation is Hidden in Plain View, the Contribution of Black Catholics in the U.S. Civil Rights Movement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a... Excuse me, I'm sorry, I got slightly distracted. And so that should be a great talk. She is a professor in the Department of Religious Studies, mm-hmm. There at the University of Dayton.
Yes.
And she was, I can tell you more about that, but I'll let you ask the questions. But she's a professor in Religious Studies, and she's also a chair of the Black Studies Department at Xavier University in their Religious Studies Department.
Wow. A couple of great Catholic universities.
Yes.
Indeed. The history of Black Catholics in America, it's a very interesting history, and it's probably not a well-known history.
No, it is not, yet it's being here from the inception of the country, mm-hmm. the hub of Catholicism in the United States is, or the central point of growth is of Baltimore.
Right.
And that was the first diocese. And with the slavery and that history, there were Black Catholics that began there. And so that's where it all started. The major hubs of growth of Black Catholicism are in the traditional Latin-linked regions, somewhat, especially certainly Louisiana and then Mississippi as well, which many of us don't quite think of that, but on the Gulf areas of the U.S.
Yeah, we do think of those areas more as, other than Louisiana, of course, as, as largely Baptist.
Yes, yes, particularly Mississippi and so forth. But
right.
There are significant Catholic populations in those regions as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then also on the East Coast, but many Black Catholics will come from the Baltimore region and then also the southern part of the United States, Louisiana and the Gulf states. And there are some interesting books available on the website, but there are lots of interesting books on that can be found at from the National Black Catholic Congress, and on their links, and also you can contact me, and I can send information if people are interested in reading, and we'll also try to get some links. We did this last year. It's not up at this time, but we gave some links for Black history in general and Black Catholic history. There's some interesting articles if people go to Our Daily Catholic, Our Daily Visitor.
Uh-huh.
There's some good links there as well. And so to give you a little bit more information about the professor, Dr. Cecilia Moore graduated magna cum laude from Sweetbriar College with an AB in History and Religion from the University of Virginia, with an MA and a PhD in American Religious History. And she's taught at the University of Dayton in their Religious Studies Department since 1996 and at Xavier University in Louisiana since 1998. She's currently an Associate Director of the degree program for the Institute of Black Catholic Studies. Incorrect on that. Her specialization is U.S. history, and currently she is working on the history of Black conversion to Roman Catholicism in the 20th century. She's also produced many scholarly and popular journals. And Dr. Moore with Dr. C. Vanessa White of the Catholic Theological Union and Father Paul Marshall, the rector of the University of Dayton, co-edited a book called Songs of Our Hearts and Meditations of Our Souls, a prayer for Black Catholics, published by St. Anthony Messenger Press in 2006. And so for the lecture on Friday, February 7th at 7:30 p.m. at St. Basil the Great Catholic Church, that address is 1200 Tuolumne Street in Vallejo, and this will be in the Monsignor Byrne Room. And then on February 8th, which is the date of our Black Catholic History Mass, our Black History Month Mass, Black Catholic History is in February, in November. But
Black Catholic History is November, but Black History Month, non-religious, if you will, is in February.
And so Dr. Moore will have her lecture during our large reception and artifact display, if you will, educational display in the Kavanaugh Room at St. Rose Catholic Church, Kavanaugh Hall, at St. Rose Catholic Church. And that will be approximately at 8:30 if people can attend the Mass, which is at 5 p.m. Excuse me, I said 8:30. That would be approximately at 6:30 p.m. if people can't attend the Mass, which is at 5 p.m.
And this,
at 5 p.m. and the reception follows.
This is the St. Rose on Franklin Boulevard.
Right, on Franklin Boulevard, 5961 Franklin Boulevard, on Saturday, February 8th.
Very good.
And We'll have a big meal, but also what's interesting at this Mass is it's going to be trilingual. The Nigerian Igbo Catholic community of Sacramento will be doing the first liturgy in Igbo. And Igbo is a Nigerian language from a major ethnic group in Nigeria, mm-hmm. and significantly Catholic. And then also the second reading will be done by the Swahili Catholic community. And they have on the first Sunday of each month at St. Rose a Mass. It's at 2:30. And on the first Sunday of each Mass, Father Cirilo Cervantes will celebrate that Mass in Swahili. And Swahili is majorly spoken in Tanzania, Kenyan. I learned that also it's spoken in you've got some parts of Uganda and some of the other countries in East Africa. And so they'll be participating as well in, by reading the second reading and also participating in the reception. And then the gospel will be read in English. And if anyone ever gets a chance to visit St. Rose on the first Sunday of each month, the Swahili community has an excellent choir, and the Mass is not in English, but you know, as we know, our Mass is standardized. So you can follow along and bring your missalette, and we can have a good time. And they also have a reception after the Mass, so it's a great way to meet new people in the community. And also the Igbo Catholic community has a Mass in Igbo at Immaculate Conception, and that's on the second Sunday of each month, mm-hmm. At around 3 p.m.
So February 9 this month. Mark, we're against the clock here, but thanks for all the information. It's going to be a fascinating time, and we'll look forward to getting you on for a longer stretch to talk about all these issues in the near future.
Okay, well, great. All this information is available at the diocesan website, www.scb.org, under the events section.
So very good.
More information is there. Thank you so much, Bob, and thank you, Gabe, and take care.
God bless you, Mark. Thanks so much. It's Mark Ross does such great work here for the Black Catholic Council. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.